One commentator said, and he was quite right, if you allowed the defense to throw away 90% of the evidence, their choice. Choose any 90% of the evidence, throw it away, leave the prosecution 10% of the evidence, there's still enough to convict. Same commentator, this was George Will, by the way, writing in the Washington Post earlier this week. Glorious. Some of you know my fondness for the Marx Brothers. I have now discovered there is no situation in the modern world that cannot be explained by applying a scene from Duck Soup to it. George Will further convinced me of this by using a moment from Duck Soup to talk about the O.J. drama. It's a wonderful moment in Duck Soup where Groucho is chasing after a beautiful young woman in the movie, and the old society matron, who's always played by Margaret Dumont in the movies, comes upon him, and she thought he was going to marry her, right? She thought that she was his only real love, and she says to him, "Rufus, what are you doing with that young woman?" He says, "Why, nothing at all, nothing at all." And she says, "Well, but you're right there, I see you." He said, "Well, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes?" It's a wonderful joke, but that's what happened in the trial. And that's what happens to Leontes. That's what happens to Leontes, okay? He's believing what's in his head. Doesn't matter what's out there. Doesn't matter that his wife has always been innocent and good. Doesn't matter that he knows, you know, she has always been loyal to him. Doesn't matter that he's known this friend since they grew up together. They're close friends. He knows his character. None of that matters. His imagination has been reared with stronger blood now. He is aware of all the possibilities in the world, and boom, over the edge he goes and he nails it right there. He puts it right there. The simple fact, in one sense, we could put it this way. Once the imagination becomes corrupt, we're capable of seeing almost anything. And indeed, once we determine that all we see can be defined from inside, what is inside is very often a disoriented mind and a corrupt imagination. We're in trouble. We are in serious trouble. It is the reason why the fact that we are not even allowing youth to have a period of pure imagination is particularly frightening. I'm not telling you anything you don't know when I say that the country in which we live is awash in pornography. Awash in pornography. I remember being 21 years old and getting the first one of those magazines in a brown paper wrapper sold under the counter. I say this to my shame because I remember the shame. I was an adult. I had attained the year of majority. I remember the shame. I walk into magazine stores now and see 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds looking at things that are 100 times worse than I saw when I was 21. And those much simpler things that I saw are burned in my imagination. I will never be free of them. I will never be free of them. They have corrupted my imagination. It's one of the reasons I cannot trust myself. It's one of the reasons I have to keep guard on myself all the time, because that work got done. I chose to do it. It's my own fault, but it got in there. It worked. Now, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, they will never be free of it. Not only will they never be free of it, it's going to work on corrupting that in other ways. And what are they told simultaneously? You are the center of the universe. You are all in all. Whatever you believe, whatever you want, whatever you feel, whatever you think is right. There is no surer way to create catastrophe. And we're creating it. And Leontes creates it. And then Shakespeare does something horrifying. Horrifying. Let me run through the rest of this speech and look what happens. too hot, to mingle friendship far as mingling bloods. I have tremor cordis on me. My heart dances, but not for joy, not joy. This entertainment may a free face put on, derive a liberty from hardiness, from bounty, fertile bosom, and well become the agent. It may, I grant, but to be paddling palms and pinching fingers as they are now, as now they are, and making practiced smiles as in a looking glass, and then to sigh as toward the mort of the dear. Oh, that is entertainment my bosom likes not, nor my brows. Mamilius, art thou my boy? He instantly starts talking to his son, who's present, who is now, notice, outside of him, next to him, saying, are you mine? Are you mine? You can chart the collapse of Leontes by following what happens to that little boy during the course of the first three acts of the play. For much of this scene, he's by his father's side as the father sees this vision of corruption in his good wife and true friend. It's horrifying. But the fact of the matter is, whatever that child, whatever might have been there, goodness of heart, purity, a memory of those innocent days, they just talked about their boyhood and now there is the boy. It's going to be lost. He is going to destroy it. And indeed, what we discover, as soon as the accusation against Hermione goes public, Mamilius becomes sick. Word comes that he's taken to his bed. He's ill. He's growing weaker. His father is killing him. He's killing all that was left in his world of innocence and goodness and purity. I'll talk in just a moment about the death of Mamilius. The reason we cannot just dismiss this as a simple fairy tale or an easygoing romance is that there are characters who do not make it through to the end. One of them is Mamilius. Mamilius does not come back at the end. The boy dies in Act 3. Hermione can return. Perdita may be found and returned, but Mamilius doesn't come back. Once he's dead, he cannot be recovered. Shakespeare is not a sentimentalist. And the other is Antigonus, who takes that little girl out and abandons her in the wild. And boom, he puts her down and boom. Which is nothing more than the external representation of what this man has become. Having become animal, he is destroyed by an animal. Having gone out into the wild and given up his humanity and, shall we say, believing in survival of the fittest. Because he says, there are occasions of wolves who nurse children. Maybe that'll happen. He leaves her out there and says, well, I hope you survive. He abandons the child out there, and the child does survive, but he doesn't. In fact, we get a rather grim discussion. The son of the shepherd says about finding the bear chewing on his shoulder bone. I mean, it's graphic. It's graphic. But Antigonus has become an animal. Having become an animal, there is no redemption for Antigonus. Antigonus is excluded from the ending of the play. Innocence can be destroyed in the world of this play. Humanity can be given up completely to the point where you're nailed, you're gone, you will not be part of the happy ending. And how? By choice. Because of actions you have chosen to perform in this world. Boy, that's not particularly Protestant, is it? Wait a minute, what? Yes, Antigonus chooses his own damnation. He acts. He takes the child, he goes out, he leaves it, and boom, he's nailed, he's gone. And there's no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse for him. And he doesn't come back. Now, we have that grim pattern working through the first three acts, and it is a grim pattern. But we also have something else happening, and it is glorious, and this is in all of the romances. An open assertion of the power of the good. In a way that Shakespeare has not shown before in any of the plays. From the beginning, when Leontes makes the public accusation against Hermione, she responds with such human dignity that we somehow know there is the possibility of a happy ending. This woman simply cannot be forgotten even after she collapses during that trial. And the reason is of the impression that she has made from the beginning. Leontes breaks into the scene, makes the public accusation, and she looks at him and says, "What is this, sport? Are you joking? Is this a game? Are you playing? Is this one of your little tripping things? I mean, is this just, what is this?" Boom, "Bear the boy hence, he shall not come about or away with him." He separates the boy from his mother. "Let her sport herself with that she's big with, for 'tis Polixenes has made thee swell thus." Horrible judge. Denying his own child, accusing his wife openly of adultery. The little boy is led out, and Hermione says, "But I'd say he had not. And I'll be sworn you would believe my saying, howe'er you lean to the nayward." "You're wrong, and you better believe me when I say you're wrong." He just is ranting. He ends the next speech by saying, "She's an adulteress. Should a villain say so, the most replenished villain in the world, he were as much more villain. You, my lord, do but mistake. If a villain would say so, I would accuse him of being an evil man. You're my lord, and therefore I say to you, you're mistaken." Self-control? You want self-control? Whoa! The respectful wife in the midst of this? That's what she is. He continues raving, "No, by my life, privy to none of this. How will this grieve you when you shall come to clearer knowledge that you thus have published me?" What does she think of? Her husband. And is sad because of what this will do to him when he comes to know the truth. It's wonderful. "When you shall come to clearer knowledge," and she doesn't doubt it will happen. "Gentle my lord, you scarce can write me truly then to say you did mistake. Even if you do then admit that you've made a mistake, that will hardly right this terrible wrong you've done me now." Absolutely calm, totally controlled. And then, finally, he hauls her off to prison. "There's some ill planet reigns," she says. "I must be patient till the heavens look with an aspect more favorable." It's in the hands of the gods. This is pretty miserable, but it'll pass. I will be patient. It is not just goodness, but it is the recognition, and it is asserted in this play, that goodness is strength. Extraordinary strength. There is no accusation he can bring against her that causes her to change her love for him, to change her character in any way. She remains completely devoted to her husband, a loyal wife. She corrects him. She corrects him with kindness. She is patient, and she puts it in the hands of the heavens and trusts in them. It's an amazing moment. It's an absolutely amazing moment. "This action I now go on is for my better grace. For some reason I'm going to be made to suffer this, but the result of it will be I will get better grace." Let me read the commentators. It's just amazing. "It is possible that for my better grace carries also the idea is sent to refine my soul through purgation, but this is unlikely since Hermione has no doubt of her own purity." ignorance is just appalling. Yes, she's really a proud woman here, right? I'm good, you're not. I don't need more grace. I'm fine, I'm... Well, it tells us instantly something about the editor, doesn't it? The words are very simple, very straightforward, and again, the assertion of, through suffering comes grace. Therefore, she's willing to suffer. Simple as that. Now, I just love this. Off she goes to prison. The truth is locked up. Truth and goodness and virtue are locked away. Who comes to tell us? Who comes to give the good news? Who comes to throw it in the face of those who did wrong? Paulina. By the way, I have to mention, there is no such character in Shakespeare's source material. As with all of his plays, he had a source for most of the stories. He would rearrange, he would change, he would combine them. This is taken from a prose romance called Pandosto by Robert Greene, written in the 1580s. It's a very, very different play. At the end of that play, the queen stays dead and Pandosto commits suicide. That's the source. Doesn't happen here. We get a rather different ending here. But in the source, there's no such character. She is Shakespeare's invention. And what is she there for? To bear witness to the truth. It's glorious. It's simply glorious. And she, by the way, the woman who plays the role in the production is one of my favorite actresses. Boy, is she good. She is just wonderful. And you get, it's brilliant. It's brilliant from Shakespeare's part. You get in this play three different visions of womanhood, all three totally positive. Hermione, who is strong, modest, long-suffering. Perdita, youthful, innocent, willing to speak up. She debates with Polixenes, okay? And Paulina. proving that it's possible to have strength in womanhood of a rather assertive nature and still be a woman. Because what she is asserting is the truth in the face of a world that is telling lies. It is rather different from what's going on now in women asserting lies in the face of God's truth and doing it by trying to become men. Which leads me to a little interlude. Although actually, no, this is another example I can give for looking at insanity, and claiming it to be sane. Last week, 1 week ago, the Naval Academy introduced the women's boxing team. I am not making this up. This follows the introduction 2 weeks before of the women's rugby team. In order to do this, they got rid of the men's fencing team and the men's volleyball team. And took the money to support women's rugby. By the way, they had their first match. I wanted to go. I didn't get there. But I did have a friend who saw it and had one of the women rugby players in one of his classes and said she came in barely able to walk and had to be helped to her chair, and someone came over and brought up a chair so she could get her legs up on him. However, we have not yet had the women's boxing team begin yet, but they are also now going to require boxing for all women in the brigade. They have to put in gloves, get in the ring and pound on each other, because it looks like they're going to be going into combat soon and they have to be prepared. But the decision was made they will only box other women. So apparently when they go into combat, they'll only be fighting other women. So So if you happen to know where there are any Amazons lurking around still, we need to organize them so they can have their own battalion of Amazons to fight against. As I was reading through this message, thinking I either had a little too much wine the night before and was now hallucinating, or that perhaps it was just a bad dream, I then came to the next section, which assured everyone it would be all right because they are ordering breast protectors for them and nose guards. I read this and exploded out of my office trying to find someone to talk to see if this was a gag message that had been sent. And everybody around me was walking around thinking this was fine. And I had one of those, really, it was one of those moments where I suddenly thought, it's all over. I have fallen down the rabbit hole. I'm at the Mad Tea Party. Everybody around me is insane, and I don't know how to get out of here. But the point, again, is the same. That everyone has gone nuts and is sincerely, they're going to do this. Young women are going to put on gloves and breast protectors and nose guards and get into the ring to pound on each other. Far gone. It is a world gone so mad, but it goes mad when those in charge, in this play called Leontes, goes mad. When the authority goes mad, then everyone else will be destroyed. We are at the mercy. Shakespeare believes in hierarchy, and insanity flows from the top down. So when Leontes goes mad, the whole kingdom is thrown into turbulence. Now, the curiosity here is that he is so convinced of his insanity, he's willing to have it checked out. And he sends messengers to Apollo's temple to get the word of the god himself to be brought back and read in the court. I have dispatched in post to sacred Delphos, to Apollo's temple, Cleomenes and Dion, whom you know of stuffed sufficiency. These are good men. Now from the oracle they will bring all, whose spiritual counsel had shall stop or spur me. Have I done well? Well done, my lord. They're all yes men around him. You know, they're all cardinals. Oh, yes. Okay. But this is the reason why Mamilius at this point is merely sick. There is still enough sanity left. There is one little beam of light left in this madman's brain that he says, whose spiritual counsel had shall stop or spur me. What the oracle says will determine what I do. Okay? If I'm right, that will spur me on. If I'm wrong, then I'll stop all this. So there is a ray of hope, and if you will, there is still a touch of grace in this soul. It has not gone completely over to evil. Or if you will, Mamilius is still alive. Though I am satisfied and need no more than what I know, yet shall the oracle give rest to the minds of others. Instantly, he goes round the bend. Such as he whose ignorant credulity will not come up to the truth. I'm right, I know I'm right. Nevertheless, they're sent for and they arrive. We get the other vision of Paulina literally bringing in the child, his own child, and presenting before him, and he screams. He has to draw back from it. in terror. There is, in King Lear, a terrifying line in Act 4, where the Duke of Albany is beginning to realize his wife Goneril is a monster, and what she is doing is wrong. And she's saying, I'm absolutely right in what I'm doing, and I'm going forward with it. And he says, wisdom and goodness to the vile seem vile. Filths savor but themselves. When you are so far gone in vileness and corruption, if you are suddenly presented with wisdom and goodness, you will recoil from it. You will draw back. He presents that dramatically. When the child, the innocent child, is brought into her father and he shrieks, he cannot bear to look on its face. It is the soul in sin recoiling from the possibility of grace. It wants its own damnation. It is immersed in its own madness. It prefers to go to hell. And it has been so blinded it cannot even begin to see the reality that is outside of it. Out! A mankind witch! Hence with her out of door! A most intelligencing bawd! And he throws Paulina out as well, who brought the child to him. I'm running out of time. I need to leap ahead to Act 3. I'm only getting halfway through. We're just doing the tragic pattern tonight. Okay. Tomorrow I'll talk about the counter movement in the play. But I do want to pause and take a few moments to look at one scene in particular. It's a short scene. It's Shakespeare at his most brilliant and masterful, and I think it's particularly important. In terms of who we are and our understandings, some of the problems we're going through at the present time. It's Act 3, Scene 1. It's one of those little scenes that would seem to be easily cut from the play. Cleomenes and Dion are returning from the oracle, and we see them on their way back. They're traveling back to Sicilia. And they're remembering what they saw when they went to Delphus and went into the temple. First, a vision of the place they were. The climate's delicate. The air most sweet. Fertile the isle. The temple much surpassing the common praise it bears. They have been to a place of great beauty, of delicacy, sweetness, fertility. I shall report, for most it caught me, the celestial habits, methinks I so should term them, and the reverence of the grave wearers. In the temple, there were priests who were wearing these vestments and behaving with great dignity. Oh, the sacrifice! How ceremonious, solemn, and unearthly it was in the offering. There is the knowledge there that if you are making sacrifice, then the manner in which you do it is ceremonious, solemn, and unearthly. You get rid of the sacrifice, as had happened in Shakespeare's England. You get rid of the ceremony, the dignity. The two are linked, and he puts them together here. But of all the burst and the ear-deafening voice of the oracle, there is the heavenly voice, and it speaks loudly, kin to Jove's thunder. It is not sweet, nice, small, kissy, kissy, huggy, huggy. It's ear-deafening. It is thunder. So surprised my sense that I was nothing. In the face of this, that individuality that can lead to self-absorption in the brain and the conviction that I am the beginning and end of all wisdom, I am everything. In the face of that, you shrink to nothing. In the face of the sacrifice, the ceremony, the clear, loud voice of God, we become nothing. So surprised my sense that I was nothing. If the events of the journey prove as successful to the queen, oh, be it so. Now, wait a minute. They had just been to the sacrifice. They've been to the temple. They're coming back. They haven't opened and read what the oracle said, but they have been given good sense. They have got right knowledge. They know she's innocent. Oh, let this prove successful to the queen. If the event of the journey prove as successful to the queen, oh, be it so, as it hath been to us, rare, pleasant, speedy, the time is worth the use on it. Great Apollo, turn all to the best. We get it again. As Hermione said, look, there's nothing I can do. It's in higher hands than mine. We get it again. Great Apollo, turn all to the best. These proclamations so forcing faults upon Hermione, I little like. The violent carriage of it will clear or end the business. God will decide. When the oracle, thus by Apollo's great divine, sealed up, God spoke through the divine, his divine, a priest who sealed it up. Shall the contents discover something rare, even then will rush to knowledge. Go, fresh horses. And gracious be the issue. The end of it, grace, grace, grace. It's a glorious little scene. It's a marvelous little scene. And of course it comes right before the trial. I'm not going to go through the trial other than to show one other thing. And again, the point I'm making is all the way through this there is the assertion of the individual standing against the gods. It's as simple as that. It is Leontes versus truth. It is the corrupt imagination against healthy innocence. It is the stuff of tragedy. He's not going to win. He's going to be broken. The accusation is read out publicly. I love the moment in the production where before they even read it, they're nailing it up in public. And then they read it publicly. And it is a show trial. She is marched out into a public square and made and had the accusation brought before in front of everyone. It's a terrible shame. And yet, since what I am to say must be but that which contradicts my accusation and the testimony on my part, no other but what comes from myself, it shall scarce boot me to say not guilty. Mine integrity being counted falsehood shall, as I express it, be so conceived. Be so received. Nobody believes me. I've been accused in this way. I can say not guilty. What good will it do? But thus, if powers divine behold our human actions as they do, I doubt not then, but innocence shall make false accusation blush and tyranny tremble at patience. It's all going to work out. God's in his heaven. This will work out. My innocence will indeed overcome that false accusation. And tyranny will be destroyed by the fact that I must be patient here. You, my Lord, best know, who least will seem to do so, my past life hath been as continent, as chaste, as true, as I am now unhappy. Which is more than history can pattern, though devised and played to take spectators. And then she runs through what's been done to her. Awful. It's a great speech. Great strength. But it is again the assertion of something in the face of a world gone mad. A world gone completely mad, and there's nobody else there to stand up other than Paulina, who will come forward. Some of the others think it's not right, but they really won't talk. They, you know, well, what can we do? We can't do anything. We're just lords. I mean, just, you know. Yeah, I know it's wrong, but, you know, it's the king. It's the king. What can I do? What can I do? We go through the trial. In come the messengers from the oracle. This is, it's a great moment. Well, You here shall swear upon this sword of justice that you, Cleomenes and Dion, have been both at Delphos, and from thence have brought this sealed up oracle by the hand delivered of great Apollo's priest, and that since then you have not dared to break the holy seal nor read the secrets in it. All this we swear. Break up the seals and read. This is one of my favorite moments in Shakespeare. They open the document and read. Hermione is chaste, Polixenes blameless, Camillo a true subject, Leontes a jealous tyrant, his innocent babe truly begotten, and the king shall live without an heir if that which is lost be not found. Boom, 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 boom. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. It is straightforward, it is direct, it is God's truth. It's not something, it's not written in modernist prose. There's no ambiguity. We don't have to search for a deeper spiritual understanding of this message. This is not a message that will grow clearer over time as we penetrate more deeply into the... It is just boom, 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 boom. There it is. Better believe it. The lords, all of them exclaim, "Now blessed be the great Apollo." Thank God. We couldn't do anything, but God did. Thank you. Praised, says Hermione. I love it. I love it. Leontes, hast thou read truth? What? I, my lord, even so as it is here set down. Yeah, this is what it says. There is no truth at all in the oracle. Simple as that. I am superior to God. I'll interpret his word, and that's falsehood. Let me tell you what's really true. It is the triumph of individualism. It is the rejection of, and here we go, revelation. Revelation. God's revealed truth, and man, in the face of that revealed truth, says, false. And everything that has happened since follows. And how does it follow? The session shall proceed. This is mere falsehood. Enter a servant. My lord, the king, what is the business? Oh, sir, I shall be hated to report it. The prince, your son, with mere conceit and fear of the queen's speed, is gone. Oh, gone. Is dead. The death of grace. The death of light. The death of hope. Man has killed that which God has given him. But willfully, openly, publicly, unhesitatingly, there is no truth at all in the oracle. This is mere falseness. Boom! Instant. It's one of those Shakespearean moments. You can always, in Shakespeare, find these juxtapositions. And he will comment on a moment of action by a counteraction. And the king is now responsible for the death of his son. How gone is dead? How, and this is romance. Apollo's angry. Whoa! Apollo's angry, and the heavens themselves do strike at my injustice. Hermione faints. To me, it's a representation of the modern world. It really is. The denial is made, the assertion of self, boom, everything's, it's lost. It's just lost. The difference is it's taken us a few hundred years. Shakespeare has it happen instantaneously. All that is good, true, beautiful, innocent, upright, true, vanishes. This news is mortal to the queen, says Paulina. Look down and see what death is doing. Take her hence. Her heart is but o'ercharged. She will recover. I have too much believed mine own suspicion. Beseech you, tenderly apply to her some remedies for life. They take her out. Apollo, pardon my great profaneness against thine oracle. I'll reconcile me to Polixenes, new woo my queen. Recall the good Camillo, whom I proclaim a man of truth, of mercy. Just sorry. We have not yet reached that point in the modern world. We're not yet willing to make that admission. The world is out there still living its lies, still mad. But I suspect the wake-up call is coming soon. I suspect it will be as abrupt, as loud, and as undeniable. And imagine, if you will, that shock of recognition when mankind realizes what it's done and what it's lost. But we're only halfway through the play. This is a play of hope. And as it speaks the truth, it speaks to that higher truth, which says our actions can still change the outcome.